Sides here on 96.3 FM. Free Radio Santa Cruz. Today we're expecting a two-hour marathon between myself and Councilmember Mike Rotkin, who hasn't yet hit the studio, but he hasn't been a no-show in any engagements that he's made, at least with me, in the last year. So I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that you'll call in to join this slugfest, 427-3772. The debate is on the basic homeless rights issue around the sleeping van and the other issues as well. Stay tuned for 2 hours after the hearing of the civil rights movement in South Africa.
Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Cohn, one for all, Toscanini, Daquan, Gin, Foo Falls, rock around the clock. Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's got a winning team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Prince's Place, Katie Place, Trouble in the Sioux.
We didn't start the fire.
Let's start the fire here on Free Radio Santa Cruz with, well, kind of a sampling of what's going on in different places in the country, some interesting news stories. The most interesting news story of all, which I don't have available because I just rushed back from San Francisco, with the latest Street Sheets, I should say Street Spirits, the homeless paper from San Francisco published by the American Friends Service Committee, which homeless folks and poor folks sell on the streets. Good news, good poetry, and good money. A dollar a paper, you get to keep the profits. If you're interested in helping, or not in helping, in helping yourself, give a call to 423-HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and pick up a stack of papers and sell them on the streets. It's perfectly legal. There have been no tickets since the ill-fated Steve Argue arrest back on November 13th, and that was dropped and admittedly an error. So you are free to sell the newspaper Street Spirit, and indeed we hope you do, because it talks about what's going on in Santa Cruz. It gives the news that other publications won't give. But as I said, the news today is about the U.S. Supreme Court handing down a decision on loitering, which in essence throws out loitering laws. But unfortunately, I just caught the tail end of an ABC news broadcast, not the most reliable or extensive source, so I can't really give it to you clearly on this show. I'm hoping to have a full analysis of that decision, maybe even give you some of the actual text of it on Sunday when the show returns from 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon. But there are some interesting stories. Up in Berkeley, I picked up some back issues of the East Bay Express, ran across this article in the April 23rd issue, Oakland Loitering Law Struck Down. Marking an about-face from an earlier decision, the Oakland City Council last week, that's I guess late April, voted 4-3 to reject an ordinance that would in effect have given the police the power to issue pedestrian parking tickets. The proposed anti-loitering ordinance had been designed to combat drug peddling on the city streets, but civil rights activists said the law would have given police license to harass innocent minority youth simply for standing around. Earlier this month, the council had approved the ordinance 6-1 with North Oakland council member Jane Brunner the only opposition vote. There's an extraordinary opportunity for abuse with this ordinance, council member Nancy Nadell said during Tuesday's debate. Defenders of the anti-loitering ordinance say opponents of the law harbor negative assumptions about the police. Oakland City Manager Robert Bobb said activists think, quote, police are going to purposefully go out and abuse people's rights. Can you imagine? The three council members who voted in favor of the ordinance, Nate Miley, Larry Reed, and Dick Spees, argue the law would have strengthened the police department's hand in trying to get drug dealers off the streets. Had the law passed, police could have cited loiterers with the equivalent of a traffic citation. Infractions would have included any action an officer deemed suspicious, repeatedly stopping passersby, transferring small objects or packages around in a suspicious way, or warning others when police were on the scene. In other words, bumming a cigarette, passing a pack of gum, or stopping a friend from jaywalking in front of a cop could be misread as illegal activity. Gwen Hardy, an activist with People United for a Better Oakland, Pueblo, said the law probably wouldn't have made much of a difference in reducing drug activity, only further exacerbated tensions between police and the communities most affected by crime. Nadell, Ignacio de la Fuente, Henry Chang, and John Russo voted to reject the loitering ordinance. Had the law passed, Russo said, persons cited for loitering would in effect have had to prove their innocence in court. How do you prove you didn't intend something? Russo asked. This law doesn't criminalize behavior, it criminalizes being. That's a story by Max Pringle in the April 23rd East Bay Express, a weekly up in the East Bay area. Picked it up in Berkeley, and that's very encouraging to hear, particularly since I was having some concerns about Jerry Brown and his sort of new supercharged full speed ahead with the police reorganization and the power mayor approach, but apparently forgetting his past concern with basic civil rights for homeless people. You may recall Jerry Brown came through Santa Cruz, I think in 93 or 94, and spoke with We the People, which was the group that he was either supporting, supported by, or both. He had a radio show in Oakland, and he publicly denounced the sleeping ban and supported protesters against it. I believe that was 94. Could have been later, a couple years after that even. But since then, of course, he's become a politician again, and we haven't heard a wisp of or breath about of opposition to that law. And, of course, that's the way of the politician, as we will find when we talk to Mike Rotkin, if and when he shows up. He's a bit late now. It's 6:10. He was due at 6, but since he has made such valiant efforts to get here in the past few shows, he's had to postpone again and again. He's rushed in to do kind of brief segments, and so that's such a superior record to any other council member that it's really hard to fault him, given the fact that everybody else has such a miserable record. So, loitering laws were thrown out in the early 80s, but in order to get rid of homeless people downtown, the cities have been reviving kind of neo-loitering laws. And in fact, in Santa Cruz, Mike Rotkin was a supporter of it was more of a community law, but you know, Rotkin was there casting a vote in favor of the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law, and the revised sit on the sidewalk 10 feet from the store window, which is our current law, go to jail, get a ticket, do it twice, misdemeanor, go to jail. And that is our current law, and it is clearly aimed at homeless people. It doesn't say homeless in the text, but that's what they're talking about. And the idea is to give the police this unbridled discretion. They can move along the people they don't like the looks of, but the rest of the folks they can just sort of tip their hats to. And you see this with dogs on the mall all the time. You see the upper class folks with their poodles, there's no problem. Whereas the hippie kids with their little puppies, you know, you're out of there or you're ticketed or both. You know, it's a difficult situation. At least I've seen this happen more than enough, more than once, and I think that it is a reality. And I think the idea of giving the police this discretion, as with the sleeping ban, is really asking for serious trouble, and is also a direct slap in the face of people who need help, not further criminalization. Apropos of which, here's a story. Fort Lauderdale may take steps to ban panhandling, the court says, by Noreen Marcus, staff writer. This was posted to the web on June 2nd. Fort Lauderdale is free to curb panhandling on the beach now that a federal appeals court has ruled in the city's favor. A 1993 rule banning begging at the prime tourist magnet is narrowly tailored to serve the city's interest in providing a safe, pleasant environment and eliminating nuisance activity on the beach, the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decided Wednesday. The prohibition applies to the oceanfront beach area bounded by Oakland Park Boulevard on the north, the Sheraton Yankee Clipper Hotel on the south, and Highway A1A on the west. Violators can be arrested and charged with trespassing. Not that there has been much panhandling in the 6 years the ban has existed, only on paper, unenforced, while it was attacked in the courts. I've seen very little panhandling as such, Robert Cimac, vice president of Love Thy Neighbor, a local group that feeds the homeless, has said. Arnold Abbott, founder of the group, added, "We rather give them what they need than have them bothering people, but it is their constitutional right." Acting on that theory, Fort Lauderdale lawyers Bruce Rogo and Beverly Pohl filed suit in federal court to challenge the begging ban on behalf of Mark Chad, a homeless man, and others like him. Chad died, and James Dale Smith took his place in the suit. Broward currently has an estimated 6,400 homeless residents. Rogo and Pohl argued the First Amendment empowers individuals to beg, like any other form of expression, on public sidewalks. When the city passed the ban, it illegally targeted only the homeless in a relatively harmless activity, they said. If somebody sat on the edge of the sidewalk and just said, "Excuse me, buddy, can you spare a dime?" under this rule, it would be prohibited, which, by the way, it is currently in Santa Cruz. You cannot ask for change, money, food, or anything of value from a seated position. Thank you, Mike Rodkin. Pohl said before the 11th Circuit heard arguments in the case last month. She could not be reached for comment on Wednesday. Ruling with unusual speed, the highest federal court for Florida, Georgia, and Alabama upheld U.S. District Judge Norman Rutger's decision last year that the city's panhandling prohibition is reasonable. The city has made the discretionary determination that begging in this designated limited beach area adversely impacts tourism. They are coming right out and saying it. It's okay to restrict the First Amendment if tourism is at stake. Kind of amazing that a U.S. Federal Circuit Court can make this decision. Noreen Marcus can be reached, and there's an email address for her at a phone number. If you're interested in further following this story, give a call to the off-air number 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can also, of course, call in to talk about this decision on the air at 427-3772, and you're encouraged to do that. 427-3772, or FRSC, if you like letters better than numbers, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And a third story in the paper, city and the ACLU settle a suit over the homeless. The Civil Liberties Group will monitor how Philadelphia police deal with people living on the street, by Joseph A. Slobodzian and Robert Moran. A civil rights lawsuit challenging Philadelphia's efforts to deal with homeless people who beg for money or set up camp on city sidewalks has been settled, with the city agreeing to let the ACLU monitor police treatment of the homeless. Settling with a lawsuit filed in January on behalf of three homeless men who have been arrested on a charge of obstructing the highway was notable for the conciliatory statements made by both the city and the ACLU. I think somebody should call up Bob Tarrant or some of our local ACLU Lights and Lives, some of the ACLU folks. We think it would be nice if, I would really be pleased if ACLU took a similar position here. The agreement filed yesterday in federal court created a process for resolving out-of-court disputes over issues of homeless people. The ACLU also agreed not to seek fees or costs in resolving disputes in accordance with the above procedure. We've actually approached the local ACLU repeatedly to try to get them to deal with the sleeping ban to no avail. In 1990, we asked attorney Bob Tarrant if he would do what I guess we are starting to do this year without an attorney, which is, in essence, defend people who are arrested under the sleeping ban or ticketed or harassed once it's clearly established there is no shelter space, as there has never been during the spring, summer, and fall, and usually isn't for most people during the winter. There's the winter armory, but it's a larger space, but it does not cover more than 10% of the homeless population. In Philadelphia, apparently the ACLU is taking a different stance, as in San Francisco for a time it took a different stance. And I'm going to be talking about this issue later in the program. The ACLU and, the ACLU didn't invite this attorney, but she was with the ACLU from San Francisco. Allison? I wish I had the flyer with me. She spoke very eloquently on driving while black and racial profiling and the need to keep stats to stop that. And when she spoke at a meeting sponsored by the NAACP and WILF last night, and I'll give you a report on that shortly. And the ACLU, a couple of folks were around, but when she said your local ACLU might be willing to help you, there was dead silence in the room. And when people asked for a local contact for people of color to deal with these kinds of complaints, nobody volunteered, except I stood up and volunteered for SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, which is a valiant little band of fighters. I'm one of them. Nick Whitehead is another. There aren't many of us. We've been kind of keeping records for years of people who've been filing complaints against different police jurisdictions here, police officers, and even different police jurisdictions. But we obviously can't handle it in terms of any follow-up, in terms of keeping things current. We can only kind of make... Well, we make some efforts, and Nick does really a fine job of kind of compiling what records he has, but it's really in the hands of the ACLU, and I'm really hoping that people here with that kind of an interest will pick up the ball again. The ACLU did to some extent do that in 1994 when the sitting ban was in front of the city council, and that was done with a couple of attorneys, including Margaret Marr, who is a very articulate attorney who I wish would return to the fray. Anyway, continuing this discussion in Philadelphia, where the ACLU picked up, defended a man arrested on the charge of obstructing the highway, and then got an agreement with the city. U.S. District Judge Robert S. Gothrop III will retain jurisdiction over the case for at least 18 months, but not for more than 30 months, should the parties be unable to resolve a dispute. In addition to agreeing not to arrest any homeless person for obstructing the highway without, quote, probable cause, the city agreed to pay $40,000 to the plaintiffs. The three homeless men, George Graham, Ricky Marshall, and Christopher Milner, will receive $10,000, $4,000, and $2,000, respectively. And of course, that means the attorneys get $24,000. Thank you very much. Or it looks like, yes. The ACLU will get the remaining $24,000 for legal costs. Boy. Paul Messing, a lawyer involved in the suit, said all three men are now in housing situations. They're all doing quite well. One of the nice things about this case is that these three men were able to make the connections to get the help they needed. Unlike many civil rights suits involving the city, yesterday's settlement does not address the merits of the lawsuit's allegations. The city admits no liability and agrees only to provide the ACLU with copies of arrest reports involving the homeless. The tenor of the agreement was a far cry from the situation in January. After filing the suit, ACLU legal director Stefan Presser called police use of the dodging about the obstructing the highway charge and the city's new sidewalk behavior law the Disneyfication of Center City. Anybody who doesn't quite fit in is going to be removed. Advocates for the homeless said the police used the obstruction law as a pretext for clearing Center City of the homeless. According to figures obtained since the lawsuit was filed, police made more than 1,000 arrests of homeless people between 1995 and March 1998. And for those of you who were at the NAACP WILP Forum on racial profiling last night, where highway patrols and police jurisdictions throughout the country are using racial profiling to harass blacks and browns and engage in completely unwarranted searches where they find drugs, which is the main thing, or contraband in 2% of the searches, and yet many of the searches, a disproportionate number of them are against people of color, it's this very similar situation. You know, you have a situation where people are homeless, and therefore the stereotype in the police officer's mind is here is a probably guilty, potentially guilty, suspicious person. Here's a person who's black, here's a person who's Hispanic, here's a person who's Asian, here's a person who's Serbian, what you will, suspicious. Let's check them out. And as a consequence, you know, when they do find drugs, naturally one isn't surprised that the figures for blacks and Hispanics in terms of being jailed are substantially higher, because if the main people being stopped for these so-called crimes, victimless crimes, many of us believe, if the majority of those stopped are of a particular color, then you're going to find a certain proportion with those drugs, and you're going to put them in jail. Whereas if you're not stopping white people, you're not going to catch the same proportion among the Caucasian population. So, and the same thing is true with homeless people, although even more so, because homeless people are literally forced to engage in behaviors which the cities are now delighting in criminalizing, like sitting down, which Santa Cruz criminalizes in many situations, like asking peacefully for spare change, which is illegal in Santa Cruz if you do it from a seated position, if you do it in a group of more than one, if you do it at any time, in any place, after dark, in any tone of voice, it is a crime. And you do it twice, it's a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. This is the law that Mike Rotkin, Cynthia Matthews voted for. This is the law that Catherine Byers voted for. Byers voted against the sitting ban, but she did not vote against the spare changing ban. And that kind of gave us a hint as to how we should have expected her to vote on the sleeping ban in March, when she made it criminal for homeless people to sleep after 11 o'clock at night outside or cover up with blankets. Continuing with a story from Philadelphia, where the ACLU mounted a counterattack on behalf of three men and won a settlement. Yesterday, Stephen Presser, ACLU legal director, said he was pleased the police department had agreed to instruct officers not to arrest the homeless on that charge unless there was probable cause that they had violated the law, defined as recklessly obstructing a public right-of-way, including a sidewalk, by making it impassable without unreasonable inconvenience or hazard. Presser said he was also pleased that evidence showed that the new sidewalk behavior ordinance was not being used incorrectly. In fact, city officials confirmed that not one homeless person had been ticketed or arrested under the new ordinance, which took effect January 18th. The law bans sleeping on the street and aggressive panhandling within 20 feet of automatic teller machines, and gives police the authority to ticket those lying or living on the streets or sidewalks. Part of the new Take a Breath, Go to Jail campaign. Fines range from $20 to $300, and resistance can result in arrest and jail. I think all sides are beginning to agree that since the sidewalk law became effective, it has become more and more apparent that the law is being administered in an even-handed, kind, and fair way, said Kevin Feely, Mayor Rendell's press secretary. Feely called the settlement fair and appropriate. John M. Gallagher, special advisor to Police Commissioner John F. Timoney, said the department had no objections to releasing to the ACLU police arrest reports involving the homeless. We have nothing to hide, Gallagher said, adding, we're saying we've never misused the charge of obstructing the highway, but we're also saying we have nothing to hide, so we'll give you these reports. Chief, only Chief Belcher would be as open. The Police Review Board on Monday, when it meets at 5:30 at City Hall, invite you all to go. That's next Monday, June 14th. They will be asking Chief Belcher, as I understand it, to turn over the complaints, the so-called minor complaints that the chief has refused to pass on to the Citizens Police Review Board. He calls these complaints, quote, simply inquiries, quote unquote. The City Council, under the Rotkin-Kennedy majority last year, refused to demand that these be turned over to the Citizens Police Review Board, even though that was the clear intent of the law back in 1994 when the law was passed. That was the clear statement of the police department's own directive C7 before Chief Belcher unilaterally rewrote it to retroactively justify his practice of concealing from the Citizens Police Review Board, supposedly the public's hand on the throttle of the police department complaint situation, so they could see what kinds of behaviors the police were engaging in terms of what was being complained about. So in Philadelphia, the police are turning over their reports. Maybe Santa Cruz's police chief Steve Belcher will do the same, particularly if enough people demand it. And of course, there is the key. Also be nice to have a few ACLU attorneys jumping on board. Invite all of your favorite ACLU attorneys, give them a call and tell them it's time to do a little of that kind of work. The police officials say that since January they have limited themselves to asking people sleeping on the street or panhandling in Philadelphia in violation of the ordinance to move along. If you say, come on, move, and they move, that's it, said Inspector James Tiano, commander of the Central Police Division, which includes Center City, and we're finding that most people are moving. Well, of course. In Berkeley, that prompted all kinds of protests, because what the police are doing is they are inferentially implying to people that if they don't move along, they're going to be in trouble. And then they're patting themselves on the back for not giving tickets and being able to bully people without giving tickets. I don't really regard that as too much of a victory. I mean, it's nice the ACLU got $24,000 and the three homeless men got small amounts of money, but I don't see a lot of cause for celebration here as I read this story. When the new ordinance was passed, city officials said it would complement a $5.6 million increase in Philadelphia's homeless aid program, atop a $63 million homeless program funded with federal, state, and local money to double the roster of outreach workers and open a new shelter for substance abusers to help those who most often refuse help. And I would also add, most frequently seek help. There are plenty of heroin addicts and other substance abusers seeking help, lining up in San Francisco by the dozens on the waiting lists, and here in Santa Cruz too, that just do not have the facilities for it. So I again wonder at the writer of the story. Maybe Philadelphia is a very special case and everybody loves to have a substance abuse problem there and doesn't seek help for it. I suppose that's possible. I sort of doubt it. I suspect that the waiting lines there are as long as in any other city. Michael Nardone, City Deputy Director of Special Needs Housing, said the combination of enforcement and added services may be the reason the Center City homeless population appears to have continued its two-year decline. I think the two things in tandem can help people along into services, Nardone said, but he added it's going to take some time for this program to work. Aha! The prodigal son has arrived. It's okay. Rutkin has slipped the feds and has made it to the studio. We're going to have to, of course, check him for a wire. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. Here's a little music from Telegraph Avenue, from a compilation of Berkeley street musicians. We're going to have our own street musicians playing this Saturday at Streetwise at Laurel Park from 1 to, I believe it's 6, maybe it's 7. Is it 6? Sherry Connable is going to be hosting that along with a number of our best street artists. So come on down. That's Laurel Park right next to Loudon Nelson Center. And here's a little bit of what Berkeley does. You can kind of... let's hope that Sherry's musicians are a little more varied than that, but I guess it's kind of soothing. Mike, let's try your mic. Oh boy. Oh, we're having a little mic problem here. Mic on the mic is not coming through. Let's see, maybe we have our mic plugged in here. I hate to say this, we're going to turn to a little more music while we attempt to... Well, I'm revealing my ignorance over the air. My God. Hang tough, folks. And remember, we have a... you can come over. That's probably what we should do. We're going to share a mic here, except, of course, now, for some reason, the mic is immobile. We're going to have to be kissing cousins here. Well, actually, we can pass it. Do it like this. All right, so... for all you out there, as we wander around the studio trying to get everything set up, we actually kind of reached that stage. In the studio with me is Councilmember Mike Rotkin, who has been a guest at least twice, three times before this year on the show. Hi, Mike.
Hi, thanks for inviting me, Robert.
You're welcome. Thanks for showing up. If you want to join this discussion, of course, we do have a phone line. It is 427-3772. I'm going to return to my same old subject just because I really want to nail this down and because I really think there's an important situation happening around public safety issues for homeless people. Mike, you probably saw in the paper 2 days ago the report of the beating of Ray Stitz. Now, Ray actually wandered into one of our meetings Tuesday at the Homeless Services Center. He's a homeless man who, kind of a feisty little bantam guy who is bleeding from the arms and bruised, and but very insistent that he had driven off the two youths who had, quote, announced themselves as troll busters. And he was sufficiently upset and angry and flustered and otherwise rational to make me believe that he was telling the truth. And Ken Cole, the head of the Homeless Services Center, called the police. The police took a report, and apparently Mae Wong thought enough of it for once to quickly put it in the paper. Usually these reports appear days, if not weeks later, or don't appear at all, so I was pleased that that happened. However, I was not pleased with the lack of response by the city council, which, of course, is typical. And you're on the city council, Mike, so I'm gonna hold you accountable. What are we going to do to make sure that, of course, we can support our police department and, you know, we can encourage people to report crimes to the police and keep an eye on each other, but people living outside, because of our laws, face kind of a, well, the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women kind of brought it up. You may remember their report. They said that they favored ending the sleeping ban, which I know you don't favor, because it would specifically enable women to sleep together in groups. It would enable women to use the police with less apprehension of warrants for specifically for sleeping ban offenses, and also it would enable them to sleep in well-lit areas, whereas now they may feel less comfortable doing it out of the apprehension that, yeah, maybe they won't be arrested, maybe the police will be nice, but then again, maybe the police won't.
Well, Robert, first of all, I have to say this again. I'm actually pleased to say this again, that the people who are, first of all, I have no reason to doubt the guy's report about being beat up by people. I'm sure that that is going on. I have no doubt about it. It's reprehensible. I think that we need to redouble our efforts, everyone in the community, to make clear to people that that kind of response to homelessness is disgusting and unacceptable, and they're certainly not acting on behalf of the majority of people in this community when they beat up homeless people. It's outrageous that they carry on that kind of activity. And as you know, in fact, I think you even mentioned this to the city council, there were at least a couple of people going around claiming they were the police when they did this, you know, and which of course I suppose initially makes it so people don't feel like they should fight back or something, but clearly these people were not the police. They were some thugs who were representing themselves as the police.
And actually, that was the case of Joe Barker, Mike, and I heard of a second instance where that happened. An individual who did not want to report to the police, so they knocked on his car, said, "Police, police, open up," and he kind of ignored them. And they went to the next van and said the same thing by his report. Again, one can never be sure of the credibility of these reports, but given the fact that it certainly happened to one man who was put in the hospital as a function of it, and the police are now investigating that, or endlessly investigating, I might add, even though they still have suspects and they've made no arrests, I give it some credibility.
Yeah, I also say I give credibility to the police, that I think they would like to enforce the law against these people that are carrying out these acts. And I think you're aware of this as well, that when people have come forward with these kinds of claims of having been brutalized by thugs or troll busters or whatever they want to call themselves, that the police have not arrested the people coming forward with the charges, either on past warrants or other kinds of issues. I can't say that that would never happen, but at this point, people should come forward if they have examples of this. I do believe the police want to follow through on this. We don't want to have that kind of activity in our town. The police don't want to have it going on. And I think it really does take the sort of... a lot of this comes down to communication among just average citizens talking to their friends and sort of circulating the word in a whole range of subcultures that exist in our society in the city of Santa Cruz to let people know that, you know, normal people are, and as well as homeless people and homeless advocates and everybody else, are just disgusted by people who would go around thinking they're doing somebody a favor by beating up defenseless people, homeless people, people who are down on their luck, etc. It's hardly the response that we want to see happen in our city.
Well, I think we can all agree that beating people up, even helpless council members, I don't advocate that. I don't advocate punching out helpless police officers either. Police officers engage in criminal behavior, on the other hand. I don't know. I'm not a violent man myself, but that's another issue. Let's set that aside. The issue, however, really has to do with, and again, getting back to the point I was kind of asking you to comment on, which was the Women's Commission for the Prevention of Violence. The Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, I got that right finally, has recommended ending the sleeping ban until such time as there is emergency shelter that's adequate. Then you don't have to worry about the sleeping ban because there's adequate shelter, but there isn't now, and there's unlikely to be in the near future, as a way of dealing with the violence that was... We've heard now 4 reports of people being beaten by police, but I know that there are at least 20 people beaten by police in the last 6 months. I know that. That is my estimate, and I don't believe I'm really far afield with that. I've talked to individual cases, and the beatings are continuing. You know, and it may be one group of people, maybe a couple of groups of people. What it boils down to is that some people are really insecure, literally insecure. They don't just have anxiety problems; they have real grounds for being afraid they're going to get the shit beaten out of them by guys kicking them at the night and hitting them with clubs and their sleeping bags. And this has excited people like Sherry Connable almost to a frenzy. Sherry is a very moderate, maybe not in your eyes, but many council members have viewed her as the moderate alternative to me in some respects. You know, she helped run a program the beach program in 1990, parks program in 1996 that the city council for several weeks funded before voices of bigotry frightened everybody into running in the other direction. That's my interpretation of it, Mike.
What a... I'll go off that tangent too in a moment. But to get to your main point that you raised, which is, you know, should we get rid of the sleeping ban as a way of dealing with the violence? I don't think that's a way to respond to this. As you know, when the campground was open for a number of years, a year and a half, there were still occasional beatings going on that again, where people were out of control about that. I don't think that by itself will solve the problem. Many homeless people don't want to be in indoor shelters. They also don't want to be in a campground or any particular area.
Stats on that? Because that's a very important point. Because my impression was that when the campground was open, there was much less violence, at least in terms of, there may have been homeless on homeless disputes, but in terms of people being beaten by gangs of troll busters, there was a place they could go, you know.
When the campground was open, one guy was thrown off the pedestrian bridge over the San Lorenzo River, and I don't remember whether he died or whether he was just maimed or something, you know, but seriously, seriously injured. And there was another severe beating that somebody had in that same period.
But not at night, not in the campground itself, not in the safe zone.
I wasn't claiming it was happening in the campground. Actually, there were some violence in the campground that people reported to the city council at the time, but it's a different order of magnitude than some.
Sure, too. I think
then thugs, you know, coming to beat people up to make a point or whatever. God knows what they think they're doing when they do that stuff. But the I don't think that's really the solution to that problem of violence. I think it's a question of changing public opinion about it. I think that can be done. I think there was a long period in Santa Cruz when people sort of felt like that was okay. Let's drive these bums, so-called bums, out of town and stuff. And it was outrageous then. I think we've had some success in turning around popular opinion around this question, and that people have do have rights, rights to some basic services, rights to shelter, that the city should provide various kinds of services, and that certainly people, everybody should be secure in their person, in the sense that nobody has the right to beat somebody up because they don't like their lifestyle or what they're doing with their lives. And I don't think that getting rid of the camping ban is the best response to that situation. I understand what you're arguing here.
What is your response? What do you think should be done?
Well, I think the main thing is that public officials need to speak out on the question, not just, you know, when invited to your radio show, but in other ways, which I've been trying to do in a number of situations on campus. We probably need to find other venues to reach people. I mean, probably the people doing this are not listening to your radio show, and unfortunately, I mean, you should take pride in that, probably, that they're not your listeners. But there are other things that they probably do listen to or watch or read, and we probably need to get letters to the editor that go to the Sentinel, which send a message that the people in this community don't appreciate what's going on. I think some of these misguided idiots probably think, gee, people will think we're just doing the right thing here, and because they'll hear people grumbling, you know, the city does too much for poor people or too much for the homeless, and they probably have some vague sense of unless challenged, that they're acting on behalf of the good citizens of Santa Cruz, and they're not, and that they need to be told that that's the case. And I do think that the police need to get a strong message, which they have directly from me. I've met with the police chief about this. I believe other council members have as well, that we want the police to respond to this. We want them to do everything they can to deal with it, including not putting at risk the people that come forward with reports. And I think that they will respect that and that that will follow. And I think that's the major effort that can be made here. And of course, one hopes that if these people get caught, and there's a likelihood that they will if they keep it up, that the juries in this town will follow through by, you know, giving them the maximum kinds of sanctions to make clear that the public find this a hate crime and unacceptable.
But in the meantime, people are sleeping unsafely outside, a fact that alarmed the Commissioner for Prevention of Violence Against Women sufficiently that in spite of their middle class makeup, in spite of their, you know, in touchness with the members of the residents of the community, they were a little apprehensive about doing this. They voted, and it was actually unanimous. Their first vote was not unanimous. They had a second vote that was unanimous in terms of they wanted either expanded shelter to cover the situation, or they wanted the sleeping ban eliminated. Now, I'm not, you know, I've talked about the sleeping ban being an anti-homeless ordinance, and I believe it is. I mean, to me, it clearly is. But you've talked at various times about emergency shelters. So what emergency shelter proposals are you coming up with, let's say, at the next city council to deal with this situation, say, to establish a safe sleeping zone?
Well, as I said on the last show that I was on, Robert, my view is that, like all of the areas of service in the city of Santa Cruz, homeless people have needs that are not being met. Lots of other groups in our society and in Santa Cruz have needs that are not being met. I do look forward to nonprofit groups or individuals to come forward with proposals of things that they think will solve problems, whether that's shelter, whether that's, you know, meal programs, health programs, et cetera, and that the city council will respond seriously to those kinds of proposals. Cities in California are not responsible for running social service programs. We don't have a social service director, a department, funding for it, or anything else. And what we've done is taken money out of our general fund, plus federal money that we're given in this area, and tried to respond to requests from citizens groups or individuals in the community who think they have ideas of ways to solve this problem. And I am quite honest and straightforward in saying, if people bring us proposals that are workable, or if they're even close to workable, we'll work on how to make them workable. I'm prepared to fund those programs, to support them, to give them the legal sanction they need to carry them out.
What are you prepared to do yourself to initiate this? I know I'm not saying you should necessarily, obviously, you know, you're a city council member, but it seems to me that you know, if you called a couple of the organizations and suggested it would be a good idea for such a program to come forward and that you would back it, you get a pretty quick response. I mean, I think, you know, if Mike Rotkin announced he was supporting a social service program of that sort tried to initiate it, I think the rest of the council, at least the people on the liberal side, the four council members on the other side who are traditionally viewed as being a liberal or conservative, would support you.
Let me just say something that answers that question and tries to address more directly the bigger issue that you're raising. I have made that offer made a request for those kinds of programs at least 10 to 15 times in public meetings. I've responded in writing, said that to people. I've said it in the newspaper. It's like I certainly have not been shy to sort of make clear that that's the way I think we should approach the problem. I think that generally, people need to come forward with proposals that actually work, and I think therein lies the difficulty. The idea of opening up a campground, for example, somewhere, and I don't know where that somewhere is. I don't honestly know where that is. And people have proposed things, but in general, I think the response has been that it's not clear where those areas would be, that would be acceptable to any four votes on the city council. And when people have proposed outdoor areas, for example, often the more environmentally concerned members of the council, Celia Scott, for example, have argued that that's not a good place to do it, or who was someone, Celia was, when she was mayor and as council member, quite concerned about the homeless and looked for a location, was unable ultimately, reported back to the city council. She couldn't figure out where it should be, although she believed there should be such a place. And I think that the issue is when the idea of having a campground somewhere that really will piss off a lot of people, if it's in their neighborhood or in some environmentally open area or in a city park or someplace else that really that bothers people, that's the kind of thing that fuels this kind of outrage against the homeless. Again, I don't think that logic obtains in, you know, well, therefore we should never do any programs or do anything else, but I think we have to propose reasonable programs that will actually work, that will not anger nearby neighbors and sort of have them fueling this idea that somehow the homeless are causing us problems in our society. And as a result, I think the solutions to these problems are that people, you know, like everywhere else, it's not up to the city council to make every proposal. We're not the only ones that have ideas or can make things happen in this town.
Well, it sounds like you're saying you don't want to propose a specific proposal. And I can give you a number of possible proposals. I'd be happy to see you look them over. You've heard them before. Let's see, we've got a potential incoming caller here, maybe just our producer testing in. Why don't you grab the earphones so you can monitor that.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Yes, hi. This is your producer, actually.
Hey, produce on.
I did want to make a comment, though. The latest issue of City on the Hill Press is out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an article on page 18 called Watching the Face of Hate. It's a whole article about hate crimes. Nowhere in the article does it mention hate crimes against the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And we find that typical of a lot of these forums on hate crimes, that they don't seem to group homeless people as a class who are being victimized by people committing hate crimes.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a question on that one, caller, or a comment?
Yeah, I'd like to hear what Council Member Rodkin has to say about that.
I think Becky is making a good point. I think that the certainly what's going on against homeless people, the reported beatings that are going on, are in fact a form of hate crime, in fact a serious and significant one, and it's clearly directed against if you'd like a class of people. And I suspect that the article in the City on the Hill Press is more kind of an element of the way we compartmentalize our ideas. The UCSC students generally tend to be very concerned about the homeless, generally tend to support, no one's ever done a formal poll, but tend to support the idea of a campground, or many of them don't support the sleeping ban. So I suspect that we shouldn't be attacking them in the sense that they don't care about this or don't think it's a matter of being a hate crime. They are thinking about one particular kind of an issue. Sometimes people get focused on crimes against gay people, or at other times they focus on the crimes, hate crimes that happen against people of color. I think it's unfortunate that people don't try and look at the thing in a comprehensive way, but just to defend the UCSC students, even when they disagree with me about stuff, I don't think that they think that this is like okay to beat homeless people, or that they don't think that that's a serious issue or even a hate crime. And Becky may be correct that it would be good for people to sort of like focus on these things in a more comprehensive way and not leave one group out when they talk about the other.
Again, I want to return to the real question to me, which is, what about tonight when, Ray Stitz is going to have to sleep out because at least for much of the last 3 weeks, there were 6 to 7 people turned away per night, according to Ken Cole, the Homeless Services Center. Though more recently, in the last week, because of a number of momentary factors, I think fewer were turned away, or none, I'm not sure. But generally speaking, there is such a significant turnaway that there are actual real people turned away. Now, it doesn't do for me to hear you say, just bring me proposals. I mean, you know what the problem is, Mike. You're savvy. You're on the inside track on a lot of these things. You've been around city government for 20 years. You may have your apprehensions about campgrounds. You may have a different reading of what happened at the Coral Street. You do have a different reading of what happened at the Coral Street open-air shelter than I do. But you are claiming here that you are concerned about the safety of poor people who sleep outside. Now, your answer seems to me to be something like, have the police investigate more thoroughly, you know, rigorously encourage them to investigate these crimes, encourage public opinion to...
Have a public, you know, who may have be witnesses to some aspect of this.
Sure.
I mean, these are all good suggestions, but they don't deal with the issue of safety for homeless people tonight. Now, when we talked about this, I don't know, it was a couple of weeks ago, or months ago, actually, you said, well, you know, everybody hasn't got a place to sleep, but then again, everybody hasn't got dental care. Oh, well. I mean, not oh, well. You'd like to see people have dental care. You'd like to see people have a place to sleep. But that's sort of, you know, there are all kinds of problems in the American system we have, or in the local system, and, you know, we're stuck with it. But setting up a safety zone for homeless people in an emergency situation was something that Marin County did. Whispering Pines in 1992. It actually wasn't just a safety zone. It lasted all summer, and of course it had problems, you know. But during that period of time, it protected the people that were there. Surely you want to see that happen. Are you telling me that the risks of drug abuse, hostility to the homeless from a bad reputation in this kind of a place, too many people coming, if there turns out to be a magnet effect, let's say during the winter, though there never has been in the summer that we've seen, are these sufficiently serious to mitigate against protecting their safety now?
Well, again, I think it's not fair, obviously you can say whatever you like, but it's not fair to sort of characterize my view about the needs that go unmet in Santa Cruz, whether those are needs of the homeless or needs of the dental example you gave or others, that somehow, that's just, oh well, that's the way it is, we'll have to suffer with it or something. And I think I work as hard as anybody and harder than most to try and change federal priorities around this question, that there's... That basically on this issue and a whole range of others that we have a completely screwed up federal system in terms of its priorities. It's where the vast majority of our taxes go and our resources in society, and they misuse them on stuff like the bombing of Yugoslavia, the building of how many battleship groups and so forth. And my view is that we need to do something about those kinds of issues, but that quick fixes that sort of, well, let's do this to fix this problem or something else to fix that problem, that don't actually get to the root of it, that are not going to ultimately be acceptable to the majority of people in town, means that the people that do it either get recalled from government or that there's a reaction against it and people decide, oh, those programs don't work. I mean, a good example are the OEO programs of the Office of Economic Opportunity Programs of the 60s, which, you know, the idea of doing poverty programs was absolutely critical, and that the fact that they were structured the way that they were and the half-hearted nature of them and the ill-planned nature of many of those, and they led to a complete, which you probably agree with me on, led to a complete disaster.
Mike. Listen, you were not recalled from office in the Coral Street open-air shelter situation, even though some people didn't like it and closed down. You know, I mean, I don't think you're going to be recalled from office for setting up an emergency camping zone for a limited period of time throughout the summer. Come on, I mean, let's be realistic. You might be recalled from office for some other things, but certainly not for that. And as for a reaction, again, I continue to bring to your attention what happened when campgrounds were set up in Fort Lauderdale and in Miami, that the visibility of homeless people actually increased the amount of funding that eventually went to social services. It had the opposite effect that perhaps one would think, that, you know, people might react against a campground, say, oh, all these dirty people, everyone's coming from, you know where, you get a DiCenzo cartoon of the week, which I'm sure you saw in the Metro, you know, that. But in fact, and this is what the social service providers tell me, and, you know, maybe they're not telling me the truth, or maybe they're misinterpreting the situation themselves, there significant increases in homeless services happened as a consequence of the Miami-Pottinger decision, which put police enforcement of sleeping bans on hold in Miami, and also actually made the Fort Lauderdale people apprehensive enough so they, too, set up a campground area and kind of more gingerly enforce their sleeping bans. So you don't believe that, then? Is that what you're saying? I mean, here it is. Hey, I'll respond.
I mean, everything is relative on some level. The huge response in Fort Lauderdale in Broward County, which is just north of Miami, was to start a whole bunch of new programs in response to stuff, and they still spend less than a third per capita than what we spend in the city of Santa Cruz. In other words, their expanse of brand new programs, they finally set up a big new shelter for 200 people, which is the size shelter that we run in Santa Cruz County, which is, you know, they have 1.5 million people in Broward County. We have, in northern Santa Cruz County, almost nobody. And I think it's fair to say that this county has already responded with all kinds of programs, and the idea that somehow we're going to, like, get a big outpouring of new public programs in response to homelessness because people are homeless are made more visible or because they're putting a camp on or these kinds of issues, it doesn't work. You have to understand that we've provided these programs without the order of some judge making us do it. We did it because people in this community, or at least leaders in this community and then followed by people, are committed to doing programs that address people's needs. We just have a very different view about this issue, and sort of saying it over again will make it more true.
Well, I mean, again, I think I see some misstatements here. What the judge did was he didn't force the county to put programs in effect. He forced them to stop enforcing the kind of laws that Santa Cruz City Council regularly enforces, or should we say set up to be enforced, the sleeping ban, the blanket ban, things like the sitting ban, laws against fires in parks or warming yourself at night or putting up a tent, shielding yourself against the elements, part of the camping ban. Again, I distinguish the camping ban from the sleeping ban here. Judge Atkins in Miami ruled you cannot do that unless you have adequate shelter, which puts them way ahead of us. I'm sorry, way ahead of us. Now, your stats on per capita stuff, I have been, as you know, disputed by Celia Scott when she was mayor, and I would like to get into an intelligent discussion and comparison of figures on that issue. I don't have the data with me, so I can't really, and I notice you don't either. So the question again is, these people are getting beaten up, and it seems to me that this is a completely legitimate circumstance for you to say, I don't normally favor outdoor camping. I don't think this is a permanent solution. I don't think this is necessarily going to work over the long run. I don't think it's going to bring in a lot of money for social services. But I'm concerned that people are getting hurt. And I'm concerned that 6 to 7 people were being turned away from the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program at night. I want to make sure that there's a safe area. I don't care if it's an inner building or an outer building or in a part of the park that's set aside, gone by dawn. I don't care. I want to see something happening. I think that kind of a gesture by you would show flexibility. You can say, I still oppose the sleeping ban. I mean, support the sleeping ban. I still don't think a campground is any kind of permanent solution. But I recognize this, a public emergency when I see one, and I don't just think that applies to people who get caught in an earthquake. I'm not just going to set up tents for merchants. I'm not just going to open up the civic auditorium for middle-class people. I believe the poor people deserve protection, too.
Well, I mean, first of all, that's an interesting claim, that's the middle-class people. The fact of the matter is that even in the earthquake, the people who end up at the Civic tend to be poor people. Middle-class people tend to have more resources and get themselves into motels or hotels or their family or friends' houses and don't have to sleep in cots in the Civic Auditorium. So I think the Civic, at least in the days that it was open after the earthquake, tended to support sort of house low-income people and stuff rather than the middle class or something. Again, we obviously disagree about this. I'm happy to let you have the last word on it and let it hang out there and see where it goes. But my own view is that this isn't a solution, that when you do, when government puts together programs that are half-baked or not well thought out and that don't make a lot of sense, even in response to crises, that people don't view them very favorably, and the end response is that people think that they start to challenge the overall programs you're involved in. They start to wonder whether government knows what it's doing, whether they recall you or not. I mean, at this point, maybe being recalled would be a blessing for me, for myself, as opposed to the community, but I really think, honestly, that it's not a kind of a program that would be effective or that would really make a difference for people, and in the end, I think there would be a backlash against it, so I really don't think it's a good way to proceed. I do think if somebody thinks there's a campground that would be acceptable in this community, they should come forward and propose what it would be, and hopefully they would find support from the city council.
We have our first caller. Hi, caller.
Hi. Michael, I want to ask you a question.
Bernard, speak up a bit, Mike is asking.
Okay, Mike, I'm going to take my answer off the radio, but do you consider this, you know, these beatings to be a crisis? I want to know.
Are the beatings a crisis? I'm sure that Mike is going to say he thinks that they're not a good idea, they're a serious matter, but obviously not serious enough to justify any kind of response in terms of increased shelter or campground or something like that?
Well, my own view is that they're part of a very wide crisis that we're facing in our society, and they're a significant part of that crisis, and they need a response, and that the police, you know, need to be mobilized to spend a particular and focused attention on this issue, not treat it like background noise or something, that it should be a high priority for them, and that they should put personnel as necessary to follow up leads and so forth. So in that sense, yeah, I think it's a crisis, and I think it deserves a response. I think it also deserves more response than it's gotten, and I suspect it will get more response from public officials speaking out on the issue, writing letters. I already wrote a letter to the Sentinel. It hasn't been published yet, hoping to reach a different audience than the people we typically talk with about these questions.
But letters are one thing, and a safe sleeping zone is another. So it obviously isn't enough of a crisis for Mike to support that kind of proposal, and I'm sure he can interrupt me and tell me that I'm wrong. And the minute he does, I will jump up in the air and start shouting hallelujah.
Depends on how I interrupt you and what I say, but I think it's fair to say that I'm not much of a supporter of outdoor shelters, and if it were not a crisis, I wouldn't be making this offer that I've made consistently over and over again, saying let somebody come forward with a particular proposal, and then I would take it seriously. If I didn't think it were a crisis, I would say, like, don't waste your time coming to the city council with some kind of a proposal for some area, either indoors or out, to have people sheltered in. I think it's enough of a crisis that I'm willing to entertain it seriously, and I've said that over and over again, and nobody yet has come forward with it, and it takes not just why not stick them there? It takes a proposal, like every one of our other social programs, where somebody says, well, this is the size, this is the number of people we think we could house there, this is how we think they would get there, here's how we would handle the problems of overflow, the reasonable issues that anybody should address if they think they've got a solution.